It's often understated how resilient and adaptable humans can be. Women in particular possess an incredible capacity for resilience and flexibility. They can switch careers, relocate to be with their partners, and succeed in creating a life for themselves in a new environment. Our guest this week, Panchali Belder, is a trailblazing example of such a woman. Panchali was a successful corporate lawyer in India, but she chose to leave everything behind and move to Munich to be with her husband. Today, she's a thriving corporate trainer in her new country. We're excited to hear from Panchali about her journey, including the challenges she faced during the transition and how she coped with them. Her story is sure to inspire others who are starting anew in a foreign land. Hi, Panchali, and welcome to this series of conversations with About Her, where, as you know, we speak to women achievers who we call women trailblazers, and we would like them to share the stories of their lives with us, to tell us about their challenges, highs and lows, basically tell us about themselves so that other women who are listening to them can get inspired and get out of whatever is holding them back to realize their potential. And eventually, we want to build a community of women who are there to support and inspire each other, motivate each other. So thank you so much for being on the show. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. And let's get started. Yeah. So just a little bit, tell us about your childhood and early life.
So I was born to parents who were very young, spoke different languages, and Bangla and Hindi, and came from two different cultures. Especially my mother's family is truly multicultural, from diverse backgrounds, religion, cultures, countries. So the challenges and struggles of growing up in a multilingual and multicultural home gave an added dimension to my life.
Okay.
You know, it really helped me to integrate into the world of my parents and also their extended families. So it was a great multicultural exercise for me growing up. You know, it really helped me in understanding the world and what it really meant to embrace diversity. Okay. And I think this is the strongest aspect of my growing up, the unique aspect of my growing up in a multilingual, multicultural family. Yeah.
Okay. So any particular memory, anything that you would like to share with us, which you think, other than, of course, the diversity aspect, which you think had an impact on the kind of person you became or you are right now?
Yes, I guess I was a very insecure child, you know, because I was an average student, and the expectations of everyone around me was quite high.
Okay.
And I was really struggling with that. So behind that very confident exterior, I was actually an insecure child.
Okay.
So for me, it was actually the struggle to and to overcome that. You know, I was so that is something that was something that I remember that shaped me later on. You know, that made me take decisions that I took along the way, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. So your family consisted of your parents and your
My two sisters.
Okay. Okay.
There's a huge age gap between us.
Okay. Okay. All right. So you're the youngest?
No, I'm the middle.
Okay.
So I have a sister who's 7 years older than I am. She's a doctor, and a younger sister who's 7 years younger than I am.
Okay.
And she studied business administration.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. She went into exports. Yeah.
Okay. So as you grew up, was it a given that you would
choose to have a profession, a career, and then when you chose to become a lawyer, then was it something that you wanted to become? What were the reasons that made you move towards that career path?
So, growing up in an essentially patriarchal society, the thing that I resonated with as a young girl was that pursuing a career provided women with a sense of relevance, purpose, accomplishment, self-worth, and confidence. Financial security would reduce vulnerability as a woman and economic uncertainty. Provide me with that measure of resilience, and independence while at the same time empowering me. So, furthermore, to be able to survive in that highly competitive working environment, when pursuing a career, I would be faced with this constant intellectual challenge, which I wouldn't have had I not pursued a career,
Of course,
perhaps.
yes,
So linked to this, there would be those unrivaled opportunities as well, to continue learning and developing, and perhaps with a steep learning curve. So I strongly felt that pursuing a career would really help me evolve, enhance and cultivate my personality. And then I thought maybe with over time, with achievements, maybe I'd inspire people around me. But that happened a little later, this inspiration bit. It was more about empowering. It was more about this resilience and self-worth.
So, why did you choose to become a lawyer?
Oh, interesting question. Because I studied history, which I still find to be a fascinating subject. And I wanted to become a teacher. I remember that specific moment in my life that opened my eyes to a legal career path. It was at a party. This was after I'd done my graduation in history, my bachelor's degree, and there was this break before I started with my master's degree. So I remember. I was at a birthday party and I overheard people discussing joint ventures. It was a profound aha moment for me. I said, I'm not going to do masters. I'm going to study law. Of course, I wanted to stand out, make a difference, and find my own niche, in whatever career path I chose. This adrenaline rush of working with businesses throughout the various stages of their life cycle. So working with a client-facing role, with a focus on building client relations, drove me to pursue this career, to study corporate law especially. I was really attracted to that business-centric nature or element of corporate law. I thought that would provide me with that unique opportunity to effect practical solutions. And that international element of that career appealed to me. I had this real interest of working on cross-border matters, potentially high-profile corporate clients. So I remember it was a like a 5 minute decision that I took, and I'm so happy that I took that decision.
So when you moved countries, what happened to your career? How did that get affected?
It just happened that I hadn't planned on getting married. It just happened. It was within 2 weeks that I decided to leave everything behind. And I didn't think about it. Everyone had misgivings. You have a great career and you have your family and you don't know this person. So, think about it. I didn't think about it. I just said, if I think too much, you know, I'm not going to take this decision. So I just, it just happened, you know. And it was just like law. I just decided in 5 minutes. I heard that conversation. So it was something like that. And it was difficult at the beginning because I'd spent so many years working as a lawyer. I thought, what can I do? You know, so there were some false starts. I dabbled in textiles. And then I realized that's not something that interests me. That's not me.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of money. And that's when I thought, hey, I've always wanted to be a trainer. You know, and why not think about it? You know, so that's when I decided I didn't want to sit at home and do nothing and twiddle my thumbs and say and regret, you know, there is nothing I can do. I knew I can't work as a lawyer here. And because that would mean studying law all over again, because the system, the legal systems are different. I'm a common law lawyer, so it's civil law here. So I didn't even think about it. I didn't like, you know, what can I do? So the first thing I did was to get a teacher training from Cambridge University, initial teacher training for teaching adults.
Okay.
I started teaching in the evening. I had two small children. There was no help. So my husband and I would exchange the keys at the station.
Okay.
He would come back to work and I would go. So I started small, but I didn't give up. But I knew that this is just, I don't want to teach English to adults. I wanted to teach law. I wanted to connect that. I wanted to go back to having that connection, my passion. So, and then I took small steps, you know, broadening my skill set. So then I did another course teaching international legal English. And then I studied again, did after 2 years, I did another course, you know, so kept broadening my skill set, like intercultural cross-border training. So I became a certified intercultural trainer. And then with Trinity College London, I had another, I trained to be a international business communication skills trainer. So, you know, so I just kept expanding my skill set.
Wonderful. So tell me, of course, you started work in India, then you moved to Munich. And of course, I'm sure you faced several challenges along the way. So could you just elaborate on some of them, and particularly if you think you face challenges because of your gender?
So I guess in India, it was, I was just alone. There was no help. I think for a young girl, lack for anybody. For me, it was lack of resources, money, connections. With no one to advise me, they were huge stumbling blocks. I really had to struggle. I would take the bus, and it would take me. It would take me about an hour to reach. I couldn't afford a cab, and I was the only girl who used to take the bus. You know, and so it was very difficult. I was tired. It was not about taking the bus. It was, I was very tired. These long journeys. Connections. Most of them had, especially the men, their fathers were lawyers. So they had a lot of help. I didn't. So I really had to fight. But I didn't give up. It didn't dishearten me. And as a girl, traveling in a bus was a hell. It's a horror.
I can imagine.
Men didn't face that. I would come home dejected, you know. But one side I was dejected, but on the other side was, I've got to change this. It's only for a time. And I wasn't paid.
So that was when you had started working as a lawyer, you weren't being paid. Is that it?
Yeah, because I had no connections, nobody. I did my own research. I wanted to work with the best because I knew I had to work extra hard as a woman, as a young girl with no resources, no connection. So I just did my research and I called up the partner from the telephone booth and I said, I've just finished law. I'm a student fresh out of law school. I'd like to work with you.
Okay.
And he said, that's interesting. I've never got a call like that. So he said, okay, come tomorrow.
Okay.
So I went there. There was a man sitting there, Sangeeta. And he had no business to comment. He sat there. Yeah, he was there, sitting there, son of a rich man, well-to-do, lawyer.
Yeah.
And I think that was, I didn't realize that I was a woman and that was, you know, that. But I remember he said, oh, sir, you are giving her time to work with you, to learn from you. So actually, she should pay you.
Actually?
I'm not sure if this would have happened to a man. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, okay, I'll go through this.
Okay.
I'm not going to give up. This is my chance. And I'm going to, I said, okay, then I'll work 5 days a week. In India, you know, that those days, I don't know how it is now, but it was 6 days a week.
Okay.
So I said, I can't come on Saturdays. I need to work on Saturdays and to earn, to pay my bills.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said, okay. So that was the start. And I really, really worked hard. So this was the challenge that I had. But it paid off. He was very, very happy with my work.
Okay.
And he was so happy that I told him that I want to go into corporate law. I don't want to do litigation. So he picked up the phone. He said, I know, I've seen that passion and I've seen you work hard and I think you're going to do well. So he picked up the phone. He called another law firm and he said, here's a young girl. She's worked with me. She's very good. You'll be happy with hers.
Okay. All right.
And that's how the journey started. So that was in India.
Okay.
In Germany, the challenges were different.
Of course, I'm sure.
There was a lot of safety. I never had any problems as a woman traveling or that wasn't. It was completely being an outsider, not being a German, the language, etc. These were the cultural issues. These were the differences. And then I became a mother. So these were the challenges. The set of challenges were completely different. Doing something completely different.
Yes.
Figuring out what to do.
Getting used to the new place, a new, you know, way of living and all of that. I'm sure that also must
it
have
happened.
Been.
That's right. It all happened at once. Moving to a different country, becoming a mother, living with another person, sharing everything. For the time being financially dependent on that person. So those were a different set of challenges.
But did you face anything related to your gender in Germany or no?
No.
Okay.
Not really. No.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. So,
Banjali, I guess it was,
sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I guess it was because I'd taken a break from work. I think it was a long time. And then the kind of work as a trainer was completely different. So I really, and then I was working independently. I wasn't working with men around me. So it was very different, I guess.
Yeah.
A very different scenario.
Okay. So, okay. Now tell me something, of course, anywhere, a woman, wherever she is, in whichever part of the world, we do have to multitask a lot and, you know, wear different hats. So is there any particular formula or is there any particular way that you have found to balance the different aspects of your life?
Yeah. For that, I have some sanity saving strategies that are doable to create a work-life balance. The first one was establishing clear boundaries at work.
Okay.
That was my strategy one. I didn't do this in India, actually. I worked. I worked, worked, worked. It was getting to the top because I wanted to, you know. So, that came later, as a mother, as a wife, as a person, because in India I realized that working 6 days, 7 days a week, I could feel this burnout. So yeah, that's why I decided that I need to balance this. So that was one, establishing boundaries at work, which meant that I don't take work home. And I leave work at workplace. I stopped checking emails after work. I never check emails on weekends, for example. And then, very, very importantly, leaving work on time, which I never did as a lawyer, you know. So even if I'm in the middle of a task. So that was one, establishing clear boundaries. Second was making my time, or is making my time count. Which means that I spend my time meaningfully in each of the respective spaces. You know, so that meant I am ensuring that I spend my time outside of work pursuing hobbies. You know, or doing activities that align with my values. So, so that was one that, you know, I, and then I made, the third one is I make concrete commitments. And that is, I'm more likely to stick with my personal activities. You know, I can have a list. Oh, I want to read a book. I want to do this in my free time. But I really made concrete commitments. And that meant that I will follow through all these activities that I had reserved for my free time, you know. So, which means that I will go to the gym, and these are the days I will, come what may. And I set my goals for that, you know, that this is what I will do this week, week two. So I was making concrete commitments just the way I did at work. You know, I have this task, I have this goal, the same way I did for my personal activities. I made concrete commitments there. We fail to do that, you know. We make these commitments at work, but not with our you know, free time activities. So that's what I did. If I want to have book discussions, I set my time and I spend time there, you know. I never cut down on that. Or I would go for walks with my friend, with my family, and sport activities. So I made these concrete commitments. I will do that, and I have a goal. So that was the, and then I allow myself flexibility. So, which means that I didn't, like, I didn't say, okay, exactly so much percentage of my time should be for work. Exactly so much percentage of my free time, you know. So there will be times when I need to give more to work and more to, or sometimes more to my personal life, you know. So what is important is that I need to be aware of striking a balance. So, but I wanted to establish a system and a structure that allowed me to be flexible as well. You know, I didn't want to think too much that, oh God, I have to do this, you know. So, okay, even if I have a typical 8 hour day training session, then I said, okay, it doesn't matter. Today, I'll just leave, you know, and meet an out of town friend. So it's okay if I don't have that strict division of time. So I allowed that flexibility. And I'll make it up some other day. And also, I think what is most important is, and was very difficult for me, was to resist perfectionism at work. That down on my free time and my me time and that work-life balance to spend time with my family, with my children, with myself. So that was that. I'm okay with leaving my assignments, even if they are not perfect.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing. Yeah, I think these are some of the strategies.
I think it's a good idea because, you know, trying to be the perfect in everything, we end up losing out on so many other things. So I think perfection is something that we should not aspire for. Yes, a task well done, but definitely does not have to be the best.
Yeah. Great.
Panchali, tell us, when you look back at your life, what do you think has been your biggest success? Of course, you have miles to go, but as of now, if you were to look back, what would you think was or has been your biggest success?
I see every stage as a big success. I've never kind of graded them. For me, each step was huge at that moment of my life. So I've never kind of said, oh, that was the biggest success. I just took it as, I did that.
Yeah.
You know? This was great at this moment. You know, so everything that I told you have been huge success stepping stones, I think. I never compared them, never graded them, I would say.
That's a great way because, yes, everything that you do in life is a milestone, is a success. And I think it's important to realize that and feel good about it because it's something that you've achieved. Yeah.
And I never compared it with anyone if it was a bigger success because it's me.
Yes.
So I think that's what kept me happy and satisfied, I guess.
That's a good way because you always, I think your point of comparison should be you yourself and not anybody else.
Right.
I think it's very important. Okay. So on a day-to-day basis, what keeps you motivated and inspired? The highs and lows of life, how do you deal with them?
My life has been change. You've seen that, you know. We've talked about it. I think you're one of the few people who know me really well. And I think what has kept me motivated is this excitement of change. I've never seen change as a drawback. So this excitement of change and the whole new set of challenges that come with me, you know, that has always got my adrenaline going, rushing. You know?
Yeah.
So all along this journey so far has been keeping an eye on enhancing my skill set and continuously exploring ways to learn something new.
Okay.
So this has been, I guess, my mantra to keep myself motivated.
So on a typical day, say you're feeling low and you're not really feeling very bright and chirpy. So how do you get out of those dark moods? What do you do?
I try not to think about it.
Okay.
I just try to think about something else, you know, something positive. Because wallowing in self-pity or, it's not going to get me anywhere.
That's true.
So sometimes I also just pick up the phone or text someone I know who's going to make me happy, inspire me, or ask them, hey, what are you doing? And I think that I just forget about it. I think I just switch off, you know. But it didn't happen in a day.
Yeah, definitely not. We all take time to devise our ways and, you know, strategies of dealing with things.
Yeah, especially me, I think I used to think a lot. You know, it isn't that I was, it was easy for me. It was one of the hardest things for me to be able to not think about it and think about something else.
Yeah.
That took a while.
I'm sure it's always easier said than done. You know, it's like, it's not that easy to stop thinking about something which is bothering you or, you know, it is at the top of your mind. How can you stop thinking about it? But of course, I guess you could train your mind and you are a trainer at the end of the day. So if you can train others, you can train yourself too.
I I'll tell you another thing that I do. I think I told someone else the other day. Sometimes I do something like, I don't know if you find it silly, but sometimes I just go and sit in front of the mirror and
Okay.
put on some music. And I tell myself how beautiful I am.
Well, you are. But that is
I just
actually
stay with it as
wonderful.
long as I put on makeup. You know, it's not about looking beautiful externally, it's just the feeling. It's for me, you know.
Feel good
And
for everybody to see.
I just spend time putting on makeup, do my hair, sit there, and I just tell myself, I'm beautiful, I'm good, you know. I just think about everything that's good about me, you know.
Wonderful.
I think, and it's really, really uplifting. It's really nice. I don't do it all the time. Most of the time, I pick up the phone and talk to someone who's going to inspire me, who's going to talk about something else. But I do this as well. It really works.
I'm sure it
I mean,
does.
you go out for a walk, you know, just leave things as they are. Go out for a walk and just enjoy nature. You forget and come back refreshed and then see how you're going to tackle this. You know, you have to tackle it. You can't run away. I'm not running away. But I come back, recharged my batteries, and do. But I do this too, sitting in front of the mirror. I don't know if anyone else does that.
Well, you
Do
never
you think
know.
it's
Maybe some people will get an idea after listening to you.
really?
All right. So where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
Sangeeta, if you'd asked me this question 15 years ago, I would have said, as a senior partner of a boutique law firm, working with some of the world's leading businesses on cross-border transactions. Actually, this was a goal that I had, and I'd been working hard towards it.
Okay.
But it just didn't happen. As life would have it, as we talked about it, I moved to a different country, took a break for 6 years to be a full-time mother, to adjust a different environment. And after that, I completed a training course to be a trainer, and then you know the story. Having said that, the last 14 years as a trainer, more than 14 years, almost 15 years as a trainer, has been an incredible journey for me. Broadening my scope in teaching, training. All along this journey, I have been wholeheartedly committed to professional development by continuously honing and updating my knowledge and skills. So, although it is now at this stage of my life, it is difficult for me to imagine where I see myself in 10 years. Maybe a theater artist.
Okay.
Like on the stage at school, I loved being on the stage,
Okay.
a traveler writing travelogues, or an amateur film critic.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's some thought.
I don't know. I can't imagine where I will be or where I see myself in 10 years. But one thing I can be certain of is that I definitely want to see myself as a trainer who can look back on her teaching career with a sense of achievement and
Okay.
satisfaction, and someone who gave her utmost best and tried to make a difference in her learners' professional lives.
All
I
right.
think that's where I want to see myself in 10 years, to look back with satisfaction, with a
Okay.
sense of achievement.
So, Panchali, some of the learnings of your life, some of the lessons which life has taught you and which you would like to share with us.
I guess I would repeat again what I said, but I think setting clear milestones in my professional journey,
Okay.
always broadening my skill set, and never thinking, oh, this is what I can do. I can't do anything else. You know, so I've studied law, I've practiced law for so many years, so there's nothing else I can do. And if there's no opportunity, so I can't do a different thing. So this has been, I would say, some of the important learnings. So never say no never stop trying new things.
Yeah, that's true.
And I would say these are the most important learnings of my life.
Right.
And being positive, I think it's so important.
Of course.
And also, there are times when there were times when I lost confidence, lost faith, but I bounced back. I wouldn't say I was always very strong, very resilient.
But see, you have to learn how to face the challenges because we all do. And like you said, if you have a positive mindset, it will help you get over it. You know, life can't always be hunky-dory or, you know, always be very rosy and beautiful. It comes with a set of problems and issues. We just have to find a way around them. There is no other way.
Yeah. And there is something. There is an opening.
Of course.
We just have to find it.
Yes.
And if
Important.
A doesn't work, go for B.
True.
If
True.
that doesn't work, go for C. It
Yeah.
will work out like it happened with me.
Yes.
And I, losing time, money, it's okay. I cannot stop
Yes.
trying. So
Yeah.
I think these were some of the most important learnings of my life,
Okay.
I would say.
So tell me something. Of course, you worked in India and now you're working in Germany. And of course, as compared to earlier times, women are much more successful now in whatever they're doing. They're making a name for themselves, leaving their mark in their professions, in their careers, and in various other places. So how does the world react to women who've been successful in whatever they set out to do?
I think I've talked about this before, that I think it's a myth that the world reacts differently to a woman who has done well for herself. I think we have to change our mindset.
Okay.
If you can think outside the box, if you can deliver, the world will give you a lot of respect.
I'm sure.
Because see, ultimately, everyone wants business done, work done. And
Definitely.
If you can deliver, and if you can deliver it well, if you can show the results, the world is bound to respect you. You know, it's a give and take. If so I think equally, women have to fight more, but if they deliver, they will get their respect, I think.
But
This
not
has been
only,
with me.
okay, but not only in the work environment, even otherwise, at say social gatherings or otherwise. I mean, you think men and women are treated equally? I mean, you know, you may have had the same amount of success, but do you think women get treated differently or it's the same?
Personally, I've been treated exactly the same way, I would say.
Okay.
I guess it's people have different experiences. Or maybe I wanted to look at it that way, probably, because I didn't care.
Okay.
I wouldn't let me down, if it was something like that, I felt it's not because I'm a woman, it's just the person, it's just the individual. So I think they showed a lot of respect to women achievers.
So I think it is also the way you project yourself and the way you perceive things that also makes a difference, you know. If you are positive about it and if you feel that it's not because of my gender, but, you know, like you said, it's because of the individual, then it's the way you deal with it, you know. So that makes
sense. I never let it bother me. I always felt, you know, it's because it's that person.
So tell me something. Of course, you switched careers, so to say, because you moved countries and all of that. But even otherwise, now, if you look around you, you see a lot of people who are doing different things. So they were trained to do something else. They studied to be something, but they may have given it up completely and, you know, switched to something completely different, or they may be doing it, say, as a side hustle. So why do you think this is happening? Is there more awareness now than earlier times when people kind of, you know, picked up a career and stuck to it for all times? I mean, why do you think it's happening now?
I'll start with my personal experience. It was not about just moving countries.
Okay.
It was also about I just couldn't practice law here, you know. So it was that, yeah. So I had to find something else, you
Of
know.
course.
Also that I became a mother.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I knew that it was a conscious decision on my part to devote some time to my family. I
Definitely.
wasn't forced into it by my husband or anyone. So
Yeah.
for me, the switch was also I was looking for something where I have more time
Yeah,
because I
yeah.
didn't want this burnout. So I think women are also becoming aware, men and women both, that they want time to themselves. It's not just all about work. So
Yes.
that was the reason why I made the switch as well, you know, that I could have worked for German clients who have businesses in India, joint ventures. I could have done that also. But the switch was because I wanted to give myself some more time. I was becoming aware of me as a
Yeah.
person as well. You know, I have a different life as well.
Yeah.
But to come back to your question, I think what is happening? Why are women shifting gears?
Even men,
My
for
take
that
on
matter.
this, Sangeeta, is there are three things, major factors. I'll talk about leadership now. 20 years ago, women just wanted to work. They didn't think about leadership. They just wanted to work. I think women leaders want to advance, but they face stronger headwinds than men for obvious reasons. Women leaders are overworked and under-recognized. I'm
Okay.
talking about leadership now. You know, when you have the CEO position or higher position, we've changed now from just working and independence to leadership
Yeah,
because
yeah.
we want more. I think that's there. We want more. Of course, your other guests on the podcast may have given different views. So I'm just
Yeah,
talking
of
about
course. Yes.
leadership awareness. And women leaders are seeking a different culture of work. For me, these are the three major reasons women are shifting gears. Now, women leaders are significantly more likely than men leaders at work to leave their jobs because they want more flexibility, because they want to work for a company that is more committed to employee well-being and DEI. And I think, Sangeeta, women have reevaluated their lives and careers en masse in recent years. And there they've ushered in major workforce trends. So I think that's why they are switching jobs because they are underrepresented in corporate settings.
Okay.
They are ditching their present jobs for ones with more opportunities,
Of
you
course.
know, for more flexibility and for more commitment, you know. So the women and men have the same expectations, you know, on them in terms of producing results, generating revenue.
Yeah.
So, and then women leaders are stepping up as great people managers, you know. So I think that's why there's a huge awareness. This wasn't there 20 years ago. They just wanted to get out, gain independence, financial security, self-worth. That was that when we started, do you remember? But
Yeah.
today we want more than that.
Want more than
Today
that.
we want to be leaders and we have to fight. And we won't take no for an answer, you know, where we don't want to compromise. We want that leadership position. So I think that's why. I think we have re-evaluated
But
everything.
even when you look at men also, some of the men who are, say, doing jobs like, say, a doctor turning an author, a banker becoming a writer, or, you know, a banker taking to something like, you know, I mean, anything, becoming a pilot. What I'm trying to say is that different, completely diametrically opposite to what they had trained to become. So why would you do it in your midlife? Say you're in your 40s and suddenly you decide that, okay, now I want to start writing. I want to start I want to start flying or, something else. So why is this trend showing more now as compared to earlier times? I mean, didn't people have these kind of ambitions or aspirations when we were growing up, when our parents were, so to say, the way we are today?
Again, I would go back to, I think, because 20 years ago or 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago, as I said, we really didn't think about aligning our interests with our work.
I agree.
So it was, I think it was about just getting that independence. It was just about, we really didn't think what we really want to do. We really didn't think about pursuing our passion. Very few of us did that. I want to study law. I want to teach, like you did. But we didn't think more than that. There were very few women, fewer women, thinking like that. But there were women who were in even dire circumstances than us, who were just, I want to work. But today, they have that freedom to think beyond that, beyond that financial. They are pursuing their passion now. They are really, really thinking about what is it that makes me happy? I want to multitask as well. I mean, there are people, women, who are not only just doing, like you, take yourself as an example, that you're not only a trainer, educator, but you're now dividing your time to pursue different things, and you see them as work. So in the same way as a writer, you want to write, you want to, and the same way, I've also diversified. I'm pursuing my passion, but not just keeping them as a hobby, but actually become very, very serious about them, so I see them as equally important as my work as a trainer, so writing a book, having a blog, being an artist, whatever, so I think we are thinking about that, aligning our passion with our work. So that's why we are saying it's time now, to really do what I want to pursue my passion. And it's okay to change. It's all right.
I think there is a greater flexibility and acceptability now than before. I mean, you see so many people doing it. So, of course, that's also hugely inspiring.
Absolutely. When you see people around you, I remember somebody who very late in life, decided to study law, I think in the 60s.
So that's hugely inspirational.
I want to spend my time, still in a creative way. I want to. And then discovered that passion. Today we are in that position where it's women are allowed to work. It's okay. It's don't have to feel guilty that you've left your children at home for some time. Values have changed. So that's why women can experiment more and say, oh, it's okay for me to switch. It's okay for me to pursue my passion. They're actually really thinking about what makes me happy at work, not just earn money.
Yeah, not just
I think, yeah, I mean, there are so many reasons for that.
So Panchali, tell me something, any piece of advice that you would like to give to young girls today who are on the threshold of their lives, professional lives, personal lives, what are some of the things you think they should keep in mind?
I think at the heart of our work is the conviction that it's not the number of hours we invest in that determines the value we create. Because women feel that they have to balance and they can't be successful if they don't put in that many hours at work. So to young people, it's not that, which I did, Sangeeta. Today, if I go back and tell my younger self, this is what I would say. So it's not the number of hours that you invest in that determines the value you create. It's rather, it's the quality and focus of energy you bring to the time that you're working. So because a lot of young women are disheartened, oh, I can't be successful because I can't devote that much time to work. It's not the number of hours. We have to learn that.
Yeah.
So
It's
I
the
think
quality and
designing,
not the quantity in that sense.
Because they say, oh, I have to do, we think too much of work-life balance. And we think that if, you know, so I think that's the reason. That's what one advice I would give. And the others, as I've always said, is be open to change. See change as a good thing. How many of you get this opportunity to do different things? Change in work, change in environment, everything, you know. And keep, don't stop learning. You know, I think everyone would say that, you know, who've reached this stage of life. I think it's so important to continuously add to your skill set. I think that's another thing I would say to young people. Yes.
Okay. Okay, tell me something. We've heard this many times, which I don't believe in, but I hear a lot of people say this, that a woman is a woman's worst enemy. What have you got to say about that?
Personally,
yeah,
I haven't had that experience. There have been enemies. There have been people who've let me down. But I've seen them as individuals, not as man or the gender. It wasn't the gender. It was the person, the individual. I've got support from men. I've got support from women and the other way around. So it was more the individual than the gender, I would say. Having said that, Sangeeta, I know that there are cases where a woman is a woman's worst enemy. I don't know if you remember the book, The Twisted Sisterhood, that said, that did a survey, and there were many surveys over the years. And this book said 90% of the women surveyed felt mean and negative undercurrents from other women. Now, and there were several surveys. You know, if you read, if you Google, you will see the surveys and you will see that this shocking statistics. Now, so what is the reason? Why is a woman's worst enemy? To say that because she's a woman has no logic and it's an absurd theory. I think the reason is our concept in feminist theory, the patriarchal bargain. It's the patriarchal society, the structure that made women's worst enemy without realizing.
So you think it's something like divide and rule?
It is about that, you know, in a typically male-dominated society, So there was, I think, patriarchal bargain, if I remember correctly. I don't remember. Sometime in late 1980s, I don't remember. This famous Turkish economist, she actually delved into this, you know, because, of course, the myth was that, you know, it's not because you're just a woman, you know. It's so it was, she examined two systems of male dominance, you know, one that you have in the sub-Saharan Africa, and the other one was what you see in the Middle East, this Asian subcontinent that includes India. And then you will see that women became the token torturer, you know, because see, it started with women, the men marrying two, three, four women, you know, even in Hinduism, you know, till the Hindu Act, Marriage Act was codified, you know. And then they were asked to rule, you know, they were asked, men just put them, you know, but they were asked to deal with it. So these women had to face dominance, not only from the men, but from the older women in the family. You know, they were like used like objects, taken from one place, put in another. They had to fight, you know. So that's the reason why they became mother-in-law would, you know, dominate the daughter-in-law. the sisters-in-law, because, or the wives, you know. So they had to fight for survival, and amongst them they were thrown. So they became, you know, the token torturers.
Adversaries, and you're right.
Because they were put in this patriarchal society where men dominated and the women had to fight. The same thing happened at work, you know, because the women really had to fight to get a job, to stay there, to get to the top. That's why, you know, it's me. It's the struggle for survival. It's me, without realizing that they were harming each other, you know. So it was the patriarchal society that made the woman a token torturer, you know, that internalized societal norms to such an extent that a woman was unable to reflect the fact that the injustice rolled out by her are the same that was suffered, by them. So I think that's the reason why, not because they are women. So we have to change that system to be able to be out of that mindset, that struggle for survival.
Right. That's interesting. And it's, of course, it is true. So finally, Panchali, what do you say? Can a woman have it all?
I remember Indra Nooyi talking about it. A woman can't have it all. And also I remember, I think that was Anne-Marie Slaughter, who said a woman can't have it all. That. But really, is this only a question for women?
Yes, but then the question comes with a little bit of a twist, because I feel that what is my all if I know that? And I definitely am in a better position than the other gender to get it, because of the various other aspects of my character in terms of my emotional intelligence, my intuitiveness. I think I, as a woman, am better placed to get what I want. So when I'm saying all, my all could be different from your all.
Absolutely.
Right?
I couldn't agree with
you. Want, and also maybe not everything at the same time, but if I were to look back and say that, yes, over a lifetime, I did get what I wanted. Right? So what do you say?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm not sure, for example, who decided women want it all?
Yes,
and even if some do, who has decided what all is? Having it all is now, I feel, Sangeeta, largely weaponized against professional women, mothers. Yeah. It's a bar men aren't expected to reach, have it all. And yet it's one that continually shifts and moves to for women. So I think I would expand this idea, and I think shifts in work culture, public policy, social mores can lead to more equality, and then we can talk about women can have it all. Having a supportive spouse may well be a necessary condition if women were to have it all, but it's not sufficient, right?
Yeah.
We are agreeing with that. If women feel deeply that turning down a profession that would involve, let's say, more business travel, is the right thing to do, then they will continue to do that, right? Ultimately, Sangeeta, I think it is the society that must change. Coming to value choices to put family ahead of work, just as much as those to put work ahead of family. So if we really valued those choices, we would value the people who make them, Sangeeta. You know, I'm seeing it from that point of view. So if we valued people, so if we would do everything. And if we value the people who make these choices, you know, that is whether I want to put work ahead of family or family ahead of work. And if we value people who make these choices, depending on them, then we would do everything possible to hire and retain them. Do you know what I'm trying to say? So, so if we did everything possible to allow them to combine work and family equally over time, then the choices would get a lot easier. So I'm looking from that point of view. The key is to making it possible for women to effectively combine work and family. And that employers should provide more options about how, when, and where they do their work. The moment you value these decisions, yeah, these personal choices, and you make the environment conducive for that, a woman, a man can have it all. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah,
the solution is for both employers and employees. When I say employees, I'm particularly talking about women, is a new value exchange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, so to that extent, treat men and women like adults, allowing them to define when and where and how best to get their work done. You know, so, and hold them accountable for their results.
Of course.
Once you do that, a woman can have it all. So we need to change our
the lens, how we look at it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what my all is combined with how much support I am getting from my workplace, from my family, will determine whether I get. So my all, first of all, has to be my choice. And then, of course, I need the support from every quarter to be able to get that. Okay.
Yeah, that is exactly what I was trying to say. That
I was just trying to sum it
supportive,
up.
Yeah, that is what I said. I mean, supportive spouse is good. Supportive family is good. But then we have to see that this is a choice that I make. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you we value the people who make them and make it conducive for them.
For them. Correct. Correct.
That give them those give them those that environment where, when, how, what.
And yeah,
I think it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was it. This was like really interesting, and you know, getting to understand you a bit more, getting your, you know, perspective on different things. So really enlightening and interesting. So I hope you had a great experience being part of this show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love what you're doing. First of all, thank you for having me. And it's good. What you're doing is really great because it allows me sometimes, and it has, I'm sure, allowed your other guests to rethink, revisit.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Sometimes I think we don't do that, you know. So it has been a great opportunity for me to revisit those issues again. And probably I'll think about them again and again, bring about some more changes and work on them. So really, thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this great work. And it's always absolutely wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you.
You're an achiever yourself. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Tune in every Thursday for some more inspiring conversations with women trailblazers. If you like the show, follow us and you could leave a review to help us get better. You could even get in touch with us on any one of our social media handles.